I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 23rd of September. The Milwaukee Film Festival is going to be opening this week in Milwaukee, and it's a really big deal and very well attended with terrific documentary films and other films from all over the world. This hour, we're going to be taking an in-depth look at one of the films which caught our attention because of the subject matter. Free the Mind is the name of the film, and it stars a number of people, but it was inspired really by the work of Dr. Richard Davidson, who is our guest this hour. He's a professor of psychology and psychiatry at UW-Madison. He's a neuroscientist who leads the Center for Investigating Healthy Minds at the university. The center has expanded its research projects in recent times to examine the impact of a kindness curriculum in schools. How's that for an idea? And also the effectiveness of yoga and breathing exercises in reducing the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder in military veterans. He's the world's most cited expert on the topics of meditation and mindfulness. He was challenged by the Dalai Lama to apply the rigors of science to study positive qualities of mind. And he has been at UW-Madison since 1984. He is the author of The Emotional Life of Your Brain, was one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People, and is featured in Free the Mind, which tracks the progress made while working with veterans who are suffering from PTSD and also young children who are suffering from attention deficit disorder. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Dr. Davidson. Later in the hour, we'll have someone with us from the Milwaukee Film Festival, because I think you're going to want to attend some of these films, which will be running for quite a few days, and there are some not-to-be-missed films. For you to join our conversation, 800-486-8655 is the number, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Dr. Davidson, a pleasure to speak with you. It's been a while. Thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Well, let's start with the brain, which you have called, and isn't it something when you just think about the brain, the most complicated thing in the whole universe?
I believe indeed it is. This 3-pound mass that we still are very far from having a complete understanding of, and particularly mysterious is how conscious experience arises from this complicated piece of matter. So that is an important focus of the film and of our research. And our research in part examines how practices that are utilized to transform our minds can actually change our brains.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, what was it? Was it your own meditation that led you to this groundbreaking work in compassionate meditation and working with vets and working with kids with ADHD? Did you meditate and realize that your brain could change, or how did this all happen?
Well, it was a confluence of, I would say, many different factors. Certainly, in part, it was due to my own experiences as a meditator, which convinced me that there were some important changes that could occur as a consequence of these practices that likely will influence the brain in interesting and potentially significant ways. It was also a conviction that optimal mental health is not simply the absence of mental illness, and that there are certain qualities of mind which are worth highlighting that may have to do with optimal functioning, that qualities that can improve our well-being. Thirdly, the Dalai Lama himself was a very important catalyst and inspiration, both in his explicit remarks about the importance of studying these qualities, as well as more informally in his very example as a person who exemplifies these qualities, And the kind of inspiration that many people experience in his presence that underscores the value of this kind of these kinds of qualities and engaging in these kinds of practices, which may actually increase the likelihood or that these qualities become strengthened.
Mm-hmm. So how much do you know about, I saw the film yesterday, and it was amazing how stuck the veterans were, and you can understand they've been through such horrors, doing things that you can't imagine doing in your life and becoming a person you would never imagine you could become, getting stuck on killings and horrible, horrible events, or young people who can't get their bodies to calm down and they act out against other children and they become incredibly fearful to the point of it being paralyzing. What scientific studies have you done that show that the process of breathing and of meditation can actually change some of the, I don't know what you call them, connections or whatever in the brain that can change the behavior, the negative behavior?
Well, you know, one of the key insights of modern neuroscience is the insight around this notion of neuroplasticity.
Mm.
Neuroplasticity simply means that the brain can change in response to experience and in response to training. And neuroplasticity in and of itself is neither advantageous nor disadvantageous. It's neither positive nor negative. If we find ourselves in highly aversive and stressful situations, that can have a deleterious effect on our brains, which it did in the veterans to which you refer who are suffering from post-traumatic stress syndromes. But the fact of neuroplasticity also means that the brain is not necessarily stuck, and there are possibilities for engaging circuits in the brain that can help to change patterns of behavior and take advantage of the plasticity that is present. And so this notion of neuroplasticity can provide a framework and a context to understand how various kinds of breathing and meditation practices may alter brain function and structure in ways that potentially could be helpful to individuals who are suffering in this way. The scientific data on meditation does indicate that there are both functional and structural changes that can be observed in the brain after even short periods of meditation, periods that last just a couple of weeks. And so these findings suggest that it is worth trying some of these practices in cases like PTSD to determine if they can be helpful to at least some of these individuals. Because one of the things we do know is that traditional treatments are only effective in at best half the population, and so half the population is really not helped by traditional strategies mm-hmm. at all, and so we need to look for other methods.
Mm-hmm. And we certainly know, and the film highlights, Dr. Davidson, the number of drugs, and then we had this report about the VA last week that there are so many veterans who are being given incredible numbers of drugs, and some are interacting or they're taking too many, and there have been deaths because they're just way over medicated. And one of the young persons in the film who makes remarkable progress, who has ADHD, is given drugs when he's 3 years old, and his foster father says, come on, this is pretty young for a person this young to be on all these heavy duty medications.
That's absolutely true. And while I'm not someone who's anti-medication, I believe that the judicious use of medication in situations that demand it is certainly can be useful. I also agree that these medications are often overused, and we really need to explore non-pharmacological interventions which can produce change, and in certain cases can produce more enduring change than can be accomplished with any drug. And so that is precisely what the research that's featured in this film is focused on.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that was striking to me about several of the participants, Dr. Davidson, is once the techniques were learned and the heart rate was a little smoother and the anxiety level was down, that many of the vets found that they were at a place where they either had to confront all of the demons, the understandable horrendous images that had so flooded their lives when they were at war. Either they had, and for many of them, it was hard to do that. So is there sort of this therapeutic process that you need to go through that goes beyond breathing and meditation to confront horrors in your life?
We don't really know the answer to that question. It's a very important question. And my own conjecture from studying these individuals and from the current scientific literature is that one size is not likely to fit all. And so what you're describing may be important for a subset of individuals, but not necessarily for all individuals. And so this is something that we and others are examining at this point, and that is attempting to specify with more precision what the characteristics are of an individual that would enable him to benefit from certain kinds of interventions and not others. And this is an area where I think the scientific research is going to play a very important role.
Mm-hmm. I love the idea that you're working on a kindness curriculum in schools. What a wonderful idea that is.
Well, we think it's a wonderful idea, too, and we're very excited about the potential, and we are now implementing this in several hundred children in the Madison Public School District. We were working last year and continue to work this year to evaluate the impact of this curriculum on the developing child.
And how do you do that? What is a kindness curriculum?
Well, the kindness curriculum is a curriculum that that is taught somewhere between 8 and 12 weeks over the course of the semester, typically for 90 minutes a week in 3 30-minute periods. And it includes exercises in both mindfulness and kindness, and a whole variety of exercises to try to cultivate and strengthen these qualities in young children. So these are age-appropriate exercises. An example of a mindfulness exercise is for children to, they're told that we're going to sound a gong, and the gong produces a sound that lasts for maybe 10 or 15 seconds, and the kids are instructed to listen very, very closely to the sound, and as soon as they no longer hear any sound, they should raise their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see is that in that 10 or 15-second period when the sound is present, there's such stillness in the room. Everyone is able to be still for this short period of time, and then you see the hands just sort of jump up. And the kids love this exercise, and it teaches them that this kind of mindful attention is associated with quieting the body, quieting the mind, and really paying attention. So that's a very simple mindfulness exercise that we do. On the kindness side, we have children engage in cooperative activity where cooperation among children is necessary in order to accomplish a task. We have them practice gratitude with one another We also use quite a few age-appropriate books that exemplify the importance of these qualities and read these books to the children. So there are a whole multitude of activities that are conducted, the curriculum, as I said, it occurs over the course of about 90 minutes a week for somewhere between 8 and 12 weeks.
Mm. Oh, I hope it grows, but this country really needs that kind of curriculum everywhere, I think.
Well, our initial findings are very encouraging, and it's our aspiration that if the data continue to show promise and utility of this curriculum, it will indeed grow. One of the things we're doing now is following the children when they transition into first grade to look at the extent to which these effects continue to endure. And one of the things that we very much need to do is to extend this work to much larger sample sizes include a more diverse group of children from a more diverse group of families. And it's actually our hope at some point in the next year or two to expand this work to Milwaukee, which would be a very logical place for us to do it.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Let us know when you're here. We'd love to follow you more. And I'm sure there's, it's probably not much of a jump, but if you're paying attention to a sound, I would imagine that a part of the component is to pay attention to what's going on around you, which means paying attention to how somebody else is going through the day or dealing with looking at somebody, understanding another person's experience on Earth.
Exactly, and that's a key part of this curriculum is paying attention to other children's feelings and being sensitive to the impact that your actions have on other kids' feelings and noticing in your own body what it feels like when your classmate is experiencing certain things. And this is helping children to strengthen the roots of empathy.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the film, Dr. Davidson, Free the Mind?
I love the way the producer created it. I thought that she did a really terrific job and very sensitive job. And so I was quite pleased with how it turned out.
And they were from Finland, right? In Denmark?
From Denmark.
Well, that's interesting. Do they have a better handle on all of this in Denmark than we do?
I think they probably do. All of the cross-national data on well-being continuously shows, mm-hmm. at least over the last period of time, that Denmark consistently rates as the country in which people are happiest.
Right, right.
Any country on the planet right now. So they are doing something right.
Yeah, that caught our attention as well. Down the road, we're doing a show on why is Denmark happy. Dr. Richard Davidson is our guest for most of this hour. He is featured in, we're doing two things this hour. There's a major film festival that opens in Milwaukee later this week, and we're just concentrating on one of the films, Free the Mind, which features the work of Dr. Davidson and Dr. Davidson as well. He's a neuroscientist, very, very well known all over the world, leads the Center for Investigating Healthy Minds at UW-Madison. He's also author of The Emotional Life of Your Brain and has been doing some really groundbreaking work on kindness in schools, on yoga and breathing exercises for vets who have experienced post-traumatic stress disorder and for young people who are experiencing emotional disorders, ADHD, etc. Don't you love this idea of kindness, teaching kindness in schools? It's time. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Always to reach us. We'll start taking your calls in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I do want to let you know that Free the Mind will be shown three times as part of the Milwaukee Film Festival, which begins up on September 26th and runs through the 10th of October. And the doctor will be speaking after the Oriental Theater screen. Well, it's probably before Monday, September 30th at 7 o'clock. You can hear him speak and see the film. It's also being shown October 3rd at Fox Bay Cinema. And again at the Oriental on Tuesday, October 8th at 12:30. So it's a fascinating film. And it would be great to hear him speak, too. Richard Davidson will speak on Monday, the 30th. All right, we have a full bank of phones, so let's go to some of them and start with Linda in Grays Lake. Hi, Linda.
Hi. As a mental health practitioner, I'm very interested in how and research that would show or that might show that mindfulness impacts ADHD treatment. And I'd like advice as to how to get that out in the community and working with children. I was a school social worker for years, but now I'm a private practitioner, so I can do more differently than I did.
Yeah. Well, thank you for the question. It's a good question. The research is really still at a very early stage, and there is a little bit of research on the effects of mindfulness-based practices on ADHD, although the work is still very, very limited, and there are just a few studies that have been published in the serious scientific literature. So I would pay attention to the few things that are out there. You can go to our website for information on these topics. It's investigatinghealthyminds.org, all one word, investigatinghealthyminds.org, and we have information there. I also talk about this in my book, The Emotional Life of Your Brain. Again, the work is still at a very early stage, but to the extent that we can spread the word that there are some simple practices that likely can be very helpful with children who are affected in this way, I think it would be useful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda, very much for the call. And I found from watching the film that I've always loved those, and we always love those. Now I know why they sell them. Those things you shake up usually around the holidays, and they're little snowflakes and everything, and they settle down. But it seems to be very settling for one of the young boys who's featured in the film, and you see this transformation in him from the beginning to the end of the film, don't you?
You do, and yeah, and the snow globe was a very useful tool for the kids, and not just Will, but other children really enjoyed having the snow globe, too. It kind of is a very concrete representation of their mind.
Right.
Where it can become agitated, but then if you just let it be, let it settle, the angry thoughts really do settle down. Mm. And you can regain a sense of clarity and equanimity.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to George in Nina. Hello. Can you speak up, George? I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
That's better, yes.
Good. We have a family member who was diagnosed some years ago with ADD, and it progressed, and it got more explicit. And recently, age 19, was diagnosed with Asperger's or in the autistic schema, I think, and they're reclassifying these things now on the center or CDA, whoever writes the descriptions of various ailments, is in ADHD and ADD, I believe, into the spectrum, I think is the right word. Could you comment on that and perhaps say what the difference is between...
Okay, can you say that your phone is a little bit messy, but what's the difference, Dr. Davidson?
Between, I only caught part of that, between Asperger's and ADHD, was that the question?
Yes.
Okay, so Asperger's is a form of a milder form of autism. It's on the autism spectrum. Asperger's actually is being eliminated in the new diagnostic and statistical manual of the American Psychiatric Association. So it'll really just be part of autism spectrum disorders. And autism spectrum disorders have a profile of symptoms which are quite different from ADHD, although they can occur together. But autism involves disruptions in communication and differences in social behavior and also certain kinds of stereotype behavior. And so Asperger's, though, is usually a milder form, but one of the characteristics which many children who are exhibiting this milder form show are differences in aspects of emotional communication and social behavior. And this is something that really is subserved by different brain systems than ADHD. There are areas of the brain which are very important for social communication, for facial recognition, for empathy. And those are the systems that are implicated in Asperger's and autism. And the systems that are implicated in ADHD are involved with the regulation of attention, and they're very different brain systems.
Thanks, George, for the call. Rick in Monona. Hi.
Hi, Ann. I heard you mention something about gratitude, and I wondered if you'd talk a little bit more about it. I used to go to Al-Anon meetings, and Al-Anon meetings have a topic. And sometimes people would come in and they'd be really down and really angry or really something, and they'd request a gratitude meeting. And the amazing thing was that people would go around the room and talk about something good that had happened in their lives. And it was a dramatic shift in their feelings and attitudes. And people always walked out of those meetings on a high. And I always thought that was really powerful. And I wondered what kind of experiences you've had with it.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that. It's a wonderful observation. And certainly, I think gratitude plays a very important role in promoting well-being, in facilitating social connectedness, and also in increasing kindness and compassion. And so it really is for those reasons that we have built it into this curriculum. And what is, I think, quite interesting is that even very simple expressions of gratitude, when done on a regular basis, can have the kind of discernible impact that you are describing in the Al-Anon meetings. Although in this case it's with very young children, the young kids really naturally appreciate these kinds of activities, and our aspiration is that we can, by working with these young children, establish building blocks for cultivating healthy habits of mind that then have multiplicative effects as the children develop.
Thanks, Rick, for the call. I want to go back to the Dalai Lama, because I know that you're known as well for studying the brain, the brains of people who meditate. When you talked about what there's something unique and maybe even extraordinary that happens when you're in the presence of the Dalai Lama, what is it?
Well, many people have reported this, and the Dalai Lama and several others like him, there aren't that many, I don't think, but on the planet, who really exude kindness and compassion most of the time. And when you're in the presence of someone who does that, it's very infectious. It just has a very powerful effect on those who are around them. Just to give one little story, I was once with the Dalai Lama at an event that we were doing together at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And some listeners may have been there and know that at the Mayo Clinic, there are underground tunnels that connect all the buildings together. So in the winter, you can you don't have to go outside to go among the buildings. And there are shops along the way in these tunnels, and they're nice. And patients are often wheeled through these tunnels when they go from one building to the next for different appointments. And I was with the Dalai Lama, and we were going between two buildings, and we walked through these tunnels. And the Dalai Lama stopped at every single patient who was in a wheelchair or being wheeled on a stretcher, and actually stopped and touched them and reached out to them. And this was just, you know, this is the way he is. It's just a very spontaneous kind of activity. And it was truly remarkable to be in his presence as he was doing this. Some people knew who he was, and other people had no idea who. And it didn't matter, because I think that for everyone that he touched, whether they knew that it was the Dalai Lama or this, you know, guy dressed in strange clothes, that it had a profoundly positive influence on them.
Hmm. That's a wonderful story. Mark in Madison. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I work with people in the criminal justice system, and with that population, issues of empathy, trauma, and attention are huge for a majority of the people. So I was just wondering if the doctor had any ideas about how his work might be applied to that group of people.
Yeah, it's a great question. Thank you for asking that. In fact, it has been applied to people who are incarcerated. There are several projects where meditation has been taught to incarcerated individuals, both mindfulness meditation as well as meditation that's explicitly designed to cultivate compassion and kindness. And there have been actually two documentary films that I know of, talking about films, that have been made about this work, one featuring a prison in the United States in Alabama, a maximum security prison where this project occurred. And the scientific evidence here is meager. There's really been very, very little. But the anecdotal evidence is profound in suggesting that these strategies may really be useful in this group of individuals, a group of individuals that society has, in many cases, largely written off. At least the anecdotal observations from these projects suggest that, in fact, even these individuals may be able to change in profound ways through the systematic application of these practices. So I think that this is an area that is crying out to be more seriously studied. These are low-cost interventions in the scheme of things, and if we can even make a small dent in recidivism, it can right. save an enormous amount of both human as well as economic cost. I think we have a moral obligation to try.
And I was wondering, thank you, Mark, so much for the call. It's an important population to reach. In the film, when you looked at the veterans, some of the veterans, this whole meditation process was extremely, extremely valuable. For others, it wasn't as much. And I'm wondering, how successful are you with this in dealing with vets and with children and all you work with? And if you know why it works for some people and not for others?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's actually one of our key scientific questions now, is to better understand for whom different kinds of practices work and why they work for some people and why other practices may work for other people. The general notion that one size does not fit all, I think, is robustly clear. If you carefully examine the evidence from the extant scientific literature, you will be convinced that one size does not fit all. And that's true of any kind of treatment, not just of meditation-based treatments, but it's true of pharmacological treatment and virtually anything in this general realm. And so one of the key questions for scientific research is, can we assess people before we introduce an intervention, and based on understanding the cognitive and emotional profile of an individual, their emotional style, which is something I've studied extensively, can we more rationally assign people to interventions which are more likely to be efficacious? And this is something that I believe scientific evidence will shed a lot of light on in the next few years, and is a central area of our own work.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Dr. Richard Davidson is our guest. He is the very world-known neuroscientist leading the Center for Investigating Healthy Minds at UW-Madison. And featured in a film, we're wanting you to know about the Milwaukee Film Festival, which opens later this week, and the film that features him and work that he has been doing with veterans who have post-traumatic stress and young people who have attention deficit disorder. The film is Free the Mind, and it's going to be shown as part of the Milwaukee Film Festival, three different showings. We'll hear more about the festival at the end of this hour. But we have time for a couple more phone calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. An email, you could use that to thatistalk@wpr.org. Anne in Wautoma is next. Hello, Anne.
Hi. I'm home with a cold, and
I'm sorry.
So grateful because I'm getting this conversation. I teach piano in the after school program here in Wautoma, as well as being a substitute teacher. So I'd like to go back to the kindness curriculum. I love the gong idea, and we'll use that at the beginning of piano lessons this year with a drum. Music does have a way of stilling the mind. Music therapy has become very popular. Are there other ways that you use music in your curriculum or in your therapy?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, we don't honestly use it extensively, but probably can make much better use of it. Involved now in a collaboration with a musician who does use music a lot in these kinds of interventions. And so it's something that I hope to study more explicitly in the future, but we just don't have a lot of experience or evidence with it at this point in time.
Thank you, Anne. Glad you were home. I'm sorry you're not feeling well, but you got a new idea, which is what this program is all about at its best. Mike and Racine. Hello.
Yes, good afternoon. I've had the opportunity to go to Iowa and Fairfield and study with the Maharishi Institute. David Lynch and the singer Donovan put on a tremendous conference on using meditation in schools. And one of the elements there was also using it as a condition of parole, which had, again, strong anecdotal results. But my question relates to a movement around the country related to making more compassionate cities. And I know Louisville, Kentucky is on the cutting edge of this, and they recently had the Dalai Lama there. I wonder if this effort at more meditation is being considered in the compassionate city movement, Dr. Davidson.
Yeah, that's a great question. I've actually been in contact with some of the administrators in Louisville, Kentucky, about their initiative, and I think that this is a wonderful concept, and if we can get a whole city to buy into this and participate and create these opportunities, I think that there's a lot of synergy that can arise from a whole district adopting these kinds of methods. We haven't had a lot of experience with that yet, and so we really don't know what benefits may occur as a consequence, but the fact that it is beginning to happen and entire school districts and cities are expressing interest and embracing this kind of agenda, I think is a very hopeful sign.
Well, and it's a sign of how far all of this has come, in no small measure due to you, because if you were talking, you know, 25 years ago, people would hear about this and say, this is way out there. I mean, a few people would have embraced it completely, but others would say, a city embracing this? You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. We've come a long way in a short period of time. Just a week ago, I actually was giving a talk at the World Bank.
Oh,
in Washington, D.C., with the president of the World Bank and Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese monk who was invited to conduct a day of mindfulness at the World Bank. And the fact that this is something occurring at the World Bank
really
underscores how it has penetrated our culture.
The other point that you make in the film is that, as with anything in our lives, this isn't something you can just step into and then everything changes. You have to practice.
Absolutely. It's very much like physical exercise. None of us would think that you can do 2 weeks of physical exercise and then have the effects endure if you then stopped exercising for the rest of your life. This is a lifelong practice. And the hope with children is that we can teach them these simple skills very early on, and so the skills will become second nature, and they'll spontaneously want to practice as they grow and develop.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. You're just such an interesting person, and what a way to spend a life. It's good, isn't it?
Well, that's so kind of you to say, and I want to just thank you for having me on the program, and may these methods and practices be of benefit to as many people as possible.
I'm sure they are. Thank you, Dr. Davidson, so much. Thanks for being with us. And we want to remind you, there are many of you, I'm sure, who hear him who are inspired by all of this, as well you should be. He's going to be speaking as part of the Milwaukee Film Festival, which we are going to talk about next, because it's a terrific festival and lots of inspiration to be found in the many films and documentaries. And the film Free the Mind, which features the work of Dr. Davidson, will be part of the festival. He will be speaking next Monday, September 30th at 7 o'clock at the Oriental Theater in Milwaukee. And we're going to talk more about the film festival itself to give you information about what's going to be here and how to participate. The artistic and executive director of the Milwaukee Film Festival will join us in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The Milwaukee Film Festival is going to begin later this week. It features all 240 films, 103 features, shorts from 44 different countries. And the artistic and executive director, Jonathan Jackson, is our guest for the remainder of this hour to talk about all the films that will be here. Jonathan, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
This is a really big deal, isn't it? What I said, I almost couldn't believe it. Did I write that wrong? 240 films. That's a lot of films.
Oh, it's a ton. I'm hoping we get at least one person that watches every single one. but it's not only the 240 films, but this year we actually have 414 individual events during the 15 days.
Wow. Like what kinds of events?
Now we actually host a live music series every night of the film festival at a bar and club space around the corner from the Oriental Theater on the east side. We also hold conversations and panels around a ton of the films for the festival, and it's part of what I love about the direction that this festival is heading, and that says thinking of the film festival as a modern-day community forum.
Excellent.
A gathering place for community that, you know, because it's entertainment and because it's movies and because it's fun, you can bring a crowd together and have a serious conversation where, you know, it's not just the usual suspects that are at the discussion. So it's one of the ways that our funders have really invested in the festival. We're a nonprofit organization, and I couldn't be more thrilled to unveil the festival beginning this Thursday, September 26th.
Yeah, I love the idea of talking about the films because I see a lot of films by myself, and then I want everybody to see them so we can have a conversation. You've got a ready-made conversation here, don't you?
Yeah, we actually have a series called Conversations.
Ah.
Right now, scheduled after 88 screenings in the festival, we have either a humanities expert or an expert in the subject matter of the film who, after the film, leads the group of attendees from the screening to a local coffee shop or bar, and people can discuss the film in further detail. And it's also just a great way to meet new community members.
Great.
We really just try to encourage that conversation. We also have a couple of films that, you know, discussions that spring from specific films in the festival. One I'm particularly proud of and excited for this year as part of our MKE at Risk series is Transgender Youth Awareness. And this is a discussion that extends from the film Valentine Road, and we're actually collaborating with the Greater Milwaukee Foundation and Cream City Foundation on this talk.
So, terrific.
Excited about that, as well as, you know, I'm humbled to be on the air after Dr. Davidson.
Well, and the film about him is wonderful, too. Isn't he an inspiration? I just started breathing last night. I mean, I do this occasionally, but I think I'm going to have to take it seriously now.
Well, there's two things that struck me about the film. First, more so than any other film in the festival, this one, I actually had people throughout the year asking me if we're going to show this film. So clearly he has a lot of traction in the community.
Yes.
And there's a lot of interest. But then, you know, I'm kind of would describe myself the same way in my relation to meditation, but both after seeing the film and then after having my first child, I have a 13-week-old at home.
Oh, Jonathan, congratulations.
Thank you. It makes me all the much more motivated to become involved with this. Seeing how the kids use and integrate this process into their education is just fascinating. And, you know, part of what is exciting to me is through doing the screenings, I've become aware of and connected to groups in Milwaukee like Growing Minds, which actually is working towards incorporating meditative practices into schools across Milwaukee.
Marvelous. You probably have 400 talk show ideas from this film festival as well. We'll have to explore some of those. With 240 films, who goes about selecting what's going to be shown? That's so many.
Well, it's a complex process. No decision is made necessarily the same way. The simple way to understand how we try to select and find those 240 films is we're simply trying to present the best 15 days of cinema on the planet. And what simple feat. How we do that is that we're striving to be a best of film festival. You go to Sundance, you go to Toronto, you go to Cannes, you're seeing festivals that are trying to discover new talent and premiere films. What we have the luxury of doing is looking at all the film festivals that occur throughout the year, and we try to cherry pick the ones that are winning awards, the ones that are screening at multiple
Wonderful.
Festivals, the ones that critics are raving about. So what it turns into is this sort of foolproof lineup of cinematic heaven.
Now, we're almost out of time. This hour wasn't long enough, but that's how it happens. You need to give us information, how people find out about all the films that will be there, please.
Your number one resource is our website, mkefilm.org. I also would recommend for people maybe new to the festival to check out the Spotlight Presentation section. That's where Free the Mind is screening as part of. Tickets are $10 for an individual film. We really recommend buying them in advance. We had over 70 sellouts last year in the festival. And I would just finally, the basic details, the Oriental Theater, the Downer Theater, and the Fox Bay Cinema Grill in Milwaukee, and we begin Thursday and run through October 10th.
Oh, all the best to you. I'm sure it'll be another. It just keeps growing. It's an outstanding festival, and what an accomplishment to put it all together.
Well, thank you so much for having
thank
us.
Thank you, and have fun with your young child.
After the festival.
Talk about paying attention. You learn to pay attention when that happens in your life, right? Thank you so much for being with us. Joining us to talk a little bit about the festival, which opens later this week, Jonathan Jackson. And just a reminder that Dr. Davidson will be speaking, and then Free the Mind will be shown next Monday. There are other dates for that as well, but please go to the website to find out when everything is going to be, because there are a lot of really terrific films that will be a part of this festival. Thanks to KP Whaley and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program. That was a fun hour, wasn't it? All right, let's go breathe. We'll be with you tomorrow.